This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Thank you, Major General Bruce E. Hackett, Commanding General of the 80th Training Command, for hosting this event.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Fort Hunter Liggett in Monterey County, America's largest Army Reserve training base. A ribbon-cutting ceremony signaling the opening of a multi-million-dollar high-tech training school has just concluded. Come along and join me for a conversation with Fort Hunter Liggett Garrison Commander Colonel Charles Bell Jr., Major General Bruce Hackett, Commanding General, 80th Training Command, and Brigadier General Matthew Baker, Commanding General, 102nd Training Division. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Fort Hunter Liggett in Monterey County. Come along and join us as we visit with Colonel Charles Bell, Fort Hunter Liggett Garrison Commander.
Hey, Tom, thank you. It's nice to see you again.
You too. Always a pleasure to come on base. It's a special day on the base today.
It is. It's an incredible day. We cut the ribbon on this brand new training facility here at Fort Hunter Liggett that's going to be the Army School System Training Center. And so, yeah, it's great to see the state-of-the-art facility and cut the ribbon on it and welcome the commander from the 80th Training Command as he joined me in the ribbon cutting, and the commander from the 102nd Training Command, Brigadier General Baker, as he also joined us in the ribbon cutting event.
You have two ongoing parallel missions here at Fort Hunter Liggett. One is periodic training exercises where you'll bring in the 7th Infantry, a couple weeks or whatever. But then, and it's something I'm still learning, you have ongoing locally based training schools, military schools here that run 12 months a year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a dual mission here, and that's really how I look at it, is a dual mission. So we have our collective training exercises that go on, like we have the Navy Seabees in the box right now training, and we have the CSTX, which is our big Army Reserve exercise that occurs.
That's in the spring? Or?
It is. It's in May. So that occurs in late spring, early summer time frame.
And that might be, 8, 9, 10,000 troops rolling in here temporarily?
Absolutely, Tom. Yeah, it's just a large number of troops because they're doing large exercises that simulate large ground combat operations. So we have that training. And then aside from that training, we also have the Army school system.
And that's why we're here today.
And that's why we're here today. It's individual training that supports MOS training. So a soldier's job. So we bring soldiers in and we teach them how to be engineers, MPs. They teach PSYOP here, which is psychological operations. We also teach the 88 MIC course here. So in addition to that, we're looking to grow what we teach here. And this facility will allow us to do that because I believe it's going to host something like 319 folks.
At one time.
Yeah, at one time. So that's about double our current capacity.
Before, you were scattered all around base in Korean War and World War II buildings, right?
Yeah, we were. We had the older facilities, but we also had some minor MILCON facilities that really weren't to this capacity. They're just essentially like Butler Building classrooms, if you're familiar with
steel warehouses. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So this is a state-of-the-art MILCON facility that I think any student that comes to a course should expect and deserve, and this is it.
And what are the different schools, again, that are here?
So we have our engineer courses, our horizontal engineer courses here. In addition to that, we have our MP course. So we teach MPs, and you'll see a bunch of police cars running around the post.
This is basic training for being an MP, right?
It is. It's training for, it's not necessarily basic training, so it's more senior level training for those MPs.
So you're already an MP when you come here?
Well, there's two tracks. You can either already be an MP or you can be some other MOS but want to be an MP.
That's what I was getting at. So if I want to switch and I want to become, this is where I come to be certified.
Absolutely. Like I'm an engineer. If I was an enlisted soldier and I was an engineer and I wanted to be an MP, I could come here and get that reclassification training and be an MP. Absolutely.
Another school.
So we talked about the 88 MIC course, which the 88 MIC course was tested in a proof of principle here, but hasn't been stood up yet. General Hackett is committed to standing that course up.
And it is what? What does it do?
So that's a truck driving course.
Okay.
So
again, we might arrive on base and have no truck driving experience, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you show up, no truck driving experience, and you go from soup to nuts in terms of what it takes to be a truck driver. And then we have, you know, a massive road network out there in the training area. So we have all the training that we need, all the training space that we need.
And some brutal environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so that implies that you have rolling stock on base that's permanent, that's every type of truck you might ever encounter in the Army, true?
Yeah, we do. Absolutely. We have a combination of Humvee-like equipment. We're getting the JLTVs out here soon, and so we'll have a JLTV course. And then, we have the trucks themselves. So
very cool. Charles Bell, only because you're needed somewhere else, I got to let you go.
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate your time, and thanks for the interview.
We've been speaking with Colonel Charles Bell, Fort Hunter Liggett Garrison Commander. Major General Bruce Hackett, what a pleasure to meet you.
My pleasure, Tom.
Yeah, so you came out here for a special ceremony today at Fort Hunter Liggett. Tell us about that.
Well, I tell you what, it's always a pleasure coming out to Hunter Liggett. Obviously, you read my bio. I'm from Pennsylvania, and it's getting pretty chilly there. So it's a break coming out here and experiencing the tremendous weather that we're having out here. So I came out here for a ribbon-cutting ceremony. We represent the Army school system, and we've got a couple Army Reserve installations, Fort Dix, Fort McCoy, and this being the premier Fort Hunter Liggett.
And a lot of people don't know, this is the largest Army Reserve training base in America. That's incredible.
It is. I was surprised to hear that in the opening comments. They've got plenty of maneuver space for our soldiers to be able to maneuver, and not only that, but on the cantonment area, quite a bit of classroom space where we train soldiers.
Tell us about the game changer regarding this new school. It's kind of one-stop shopping, isn't it?
It is. Like I say, the installation's got tremendous modified barracks, a new dining facility, and with this addition, the classrooms. Those are the three-legged stool that make up our training requirements here at Hunter Liggett. But this building, we will conduct well over 30 courses here throughout the year and train over 2,000 soldiers. But the quality of life this building will bring is just phenomenal.
So it really is a game changer in a teaching in a center.
Oh, absolutely. So the buildings that we're replacing, I don't want to say inadequate, but they're not conducive to the training the soldier today. They're very smart and they're very computer savvy. And again, very intellectual soldiers, so they require an environment that requires a lot of technology.
Talk to us about the breadth of schools that are here, because a lot of people don't realize there are some real specific military police, et cetera, that right here are training.
Right. So with the amount of maneuver space that's available here at Hunter Liggett, we've got MPs. MPs with, if I may, we've got 28 military police cars on this small installation that you'll see driving around. Now, those aren't, they're not looking for any bad guys or whatever, but they're just needing the time behind the wheel. So the installation, its vast area, allows for that. So that's MPs, and we also have a crime lab on the installation.
Forensics?
Forensics, yeah, kind of like CSI type stuff. They'll go in and they'll take fingerprints and analyze the crime scene. So the installation provides for that as well. Then we've got psychological operations, that a lot of maneuver space to allow for that. And we've got a lot of horizontal engineers. When I say horizontal, meaning a lot of heavy equipment operators out at one of the training sites that move a lot of dirt and build berms and stuff like that.
That's part of your background.
It is. I come from an engineer background. I was enlisted in the Air Force as a heavy equipment operator. So it excites me to see heavy equipment churning. When I see dirt moving, I know money's being made.
Very cool. Another school here.
Another school, the 88 Mikes, which are transportation. So, again, with the vast majority of road networks that our soldiers be able to get behind the new, latest, and greatest military vehicles to drive around post freely and learn the different tricks of the trade, whether it be on a hardball installation or in the ranges on rough terrain type environment.
When you look at the other training reserve training bases around America, is this cutting edge here? Is this leading the new generation?
Let me say it's off the beaten path. It's a well-kept secret, but I see with our vision and with the right commander in place, I see it being the premier training institution, not only institution, but a training platform, not only for the Army Reserve, but all three compos.
A little bit about your background. You were in Iraq, Afghanistan?
I was. I spent four tours deployed. I started my enlisted career as a heavy equipment operator in the Air Force. Joined the Army. They gave me a better deal in the Army Corps of Engineers.
So you started out enlisted?
I did. There's a special breed of us called Mustangs that started out as an enlisted.
Did you go OCS or how?
No, I went ROTC from Indiana State University. From there, I went to the Army Corps of Engineers, and my first deployment was Desert Storm. My job there was to help rebuild the war-torn city of Kuwait. Soon after Desert Storm, my job was to help rebuild hospitals, clinics, and emergency services soon after the war. My second deployment was Iraq as a battalion commander, in 0405, phenomenal assignment, being at Baghdad and Anaconda. And then third deployment, I was a deputy commander of in 09, I switched to logistics. I became a deputy commander of an expeditionary sustainment command. Had that opportunity to deploy to Kuwait, only to do it again 3 years later as a commanding general. So the first one was a dry run, and I was very fortunate to be on that last deployment.
So you go in the Air Force, Lackland. Did you ever, in your wildest dreams, realize that you'd wind up a major general?
You know, I would say the Army's got a sense of humor. I never thought I'd make it past major, but I've done something right, and I keep telling my soldiers, in major forms, I get asked, what's the key to your success? And it's all about taking care of soldiers and just being good at what you do. So don't expect the next promotion, but you never expect the next promotion, but it just keeps coming. No, never in my wildest dreams I would expect to be at the level I'm at. But I'm very humble and grateful having the opportunity to be able to command and lead soldiers.
Your time overseas, your time in the Mideast, Kuwait, etc., how did it change your life? How did it change how you view even the Army's mission?
I will start with family. So I grew up in the Middle East. The first 14 years of my life was spent in Turkey. So I grew up in two different cultures.
So your dad was Air Force?
My father was Air Force. That's what sparked the genesis of me going into the military. But my mother is Turkish. So I grew up in two different environments. So living in the Middle East during those deployments, it was almost like a homecoming. So I experienced that, but the hardest part of any deployment is just the time away from family. But you know that it's your calling as far as the Army and the military. It's calling for a higher cause and doing it best of your abilities because that's what we enlisted in, the service for a higher calling and to protect the peace.
Major General Bruce Hackett, thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
You're welcome. Brigadier General Matthew Baker. Matthew, your background, your world has everything to do with training, doesn't it?
Training soldiers, yes. I came from the operational world where we're deploying soldiers to Afghanistan, Iraq, and Southwest Asia type environments. But the key to that is having trained soldiers to go overseas, right? So I just came from the operational world where deputy commander general for like 12,000 soldiers. So now readiness is pivotal on having these soldiers well trained. So now I'm back in the training world where it links up providing trained soldiers, being a force generator for our operational forces to go overseas.
That's why you're here today, right?
That's why I'm here today, yeah. So I'm the 102nd Commander, and I oversee the TASS Training Center that's located here.
And TASS stands for TASS?
TASS stands for the Army School System.
Tell us about what you are most impressed with coming out today and seeing the brand new facility. This is ribbon cutting day.
Yes, it's ribbon cutting day, and we've been waiting for this to come online for a while. We've been in hold mode pattern until this building became ready because we're operating out of some older buildings, and this is, you know, coming here is state of the art. And I was talking to General Link on this, and this is a university level type building, right? This is, you know, my son goes to the University of Iowa. This is the type of building that students at you know, world-class universities are going to, and that's what we're providing our soldiers, something like that.
So that being said, that's probably one of the primary benefits that serves you guys best.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And the old buildings will be refurbished and repurposed and things like that. So, and I know my staff that's on post here is actually really excited to move over here. They can't wait.
Cool. In your touring the facility, what were you most impressed with? What elements?
Just the professionalism. This is it's the corporate world, right? This is kind of the state of the art, and you look at every classroom is set up the same, meeting high levels of standards within, you know, what we're doing for our soldiers. Because I'm very passionate about providing the best learning environment for soldiers, and this is the foundation of that.
In high tech. Some elements there that you thought were really cool.
Yeah, well, they're state-of-the-art. You know, I mean, we have the learning boards. We have all these projectors and, you know, the class size, being able to adjust class sizes and things like that. And so, and again, you know, one of the keys to success for learning is the ability to make the students feel comfortable and giving them the technology to be successful.
We're about out of time, but I'm holding you captive for a moment. A little bit more about your background. When did you sign up?
I signed up when I was 17. I was enlisted soldier.
In the regular Army?
It was the National Guard Reserves, but I joined it. I went to Fort Benning, Georgia. I was an enlisted soldier and then went through OCS and started to pursue a career. So I was the lowest ranking soldier at one time. So I feel the pain, and I know the importance of education through the enlisted ranks.
And it's kind of cool because hopefully you never forgot your roots and being enlisted in that world and how it differentiates from being an officer.
Yeah, I've never forgot. And your roots are what you grow into, right? So I value my experiences as an enlisted soldier, and I know what right looks like from that perspective. So
on the one hand, it gives you more compassion. In another way, maybe a little bit tougher.
It gives me a little compassion. It sets my expectations different, right? Because if I can do it, anybody can
exactly.
do it.
Exactly. That's the tougher.
Yeah. So it's been, I've had an awesome career. I've had awesome experiences. So I'm really, you know, blessed to be where I'm at and to have those experiences along the way.
And again, how did you wind up from enlisted to officer? Was it OCS?
It was OCS. And you know, funny enough, it was, all right, hey, we have to send 5 soldiers to do this OCS screening. And they're like, Baker, you're going to go. I said, I don't want to go. They go, no, you're going to go. We have to send 5. So I went. And I got selected, and I went. So.
That's so cool. It's weird how life works, isn't it?
It's just opportunities that you take at certain times.
All right. Only because you're wanted somewhere else, I got to let you go.
Hey, thank you, sir. And thank you for being here and supporting the ribbon cutting, because this is a very significant event.
My pleasure. Brigadier General Matthew Baker, thank you so much for sharing.
Hey, thank you, sir.
And I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Fort Hunter Liggett.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.